Hi, welcome to Apps for USB Devices, a presentation on a new USB API. My name is Philip Rees. I'm the developer who designed and implemented the API with the help of many of my coworkers. So today we're going to talk about, in sequence, how to add USB to a Windows Store app, what code looks like for finding a USB device, what code looks like for communicating with a USB device, and several additional features. The Windows.devices.usb API connects apps to custom USB devices in Windows 8.1 preview. The goals of this talk that I hope you come away with is an understanding of what the new API is, learn how to use it, and to be able to anticipate some of the pitfalls with the API. This API is part of a larger set of new protocol APIs in Windows 8.1. There's also Bluetooth, HID, and Wi-Fi Direct. And in these APIs, apps communicate using a private or published protocol for the device over an industry standard transport, in this case USB, on top of only Microsoft drivers. Hardware developers can publish their protocol to enable an ecosystem of apps developed for their device. You can imagine prototyping a new device using an HTML and JavaScript app. We think this is very approachable for the growing community of hardware developers and hobbyists. Some prerequisites for this talk are the WCL23 talk that discusses overall what device protocol apps look like. And as well, you should have some knowledge of the USB device framework. Specifically, how do USB endpoints work and where are they defined? Also, knowledge of WinRT is going to be essential for your app. You need to know how streams work in I/O, as well as how async operations work because this API depends heavily on them. To get a sense of the scope of the API, let's take a quick look at the architecture. Your store app talks to the Windows.devices.usb API. In turn, our API is going to interface with the device broker in order to allow your app access to the device. I'd also like to note that this API is available for non-store apps. If you want to write a desktop app in C#, that could be a lot easier now using this API rather than WinUSB. This API is for custom peripherals. Often that means that the device is defined as its class being vendor-specific, which means it's a unique device from the manufacturer. But the API can also be used with several device classes, such as serial, firmware update, infrared, measurement, personal healthcare. The complete list is on MSDN. However, a key point to note is that WinUSB must be the device driver in order to use this API. And there are several classes that you can't talk to with this API because the system already talks to these classes, or there's another API for the class, such as for HID devices. A few more notes on device classes. When I say device class, I'm referring to the device's first interface descriptor, which defines three separate bytes declaring a class code, subclass code, and protocol code according to the USB standard. Store apps need to declare a device type in their app manifest by name or class code before opening them. And I'll go into how that works. But first, I would just like to demonstrate very briefly the custom USB device access sample, which is our code sample for the API. And also, just get to show you that this API really does talk to USB devices from store apps. So I'm going to go ahead and launch the sample app. And there's a list of devices on this screen, but there's no devices. That's because I've got this here. Now, this is a USB FX2 development board, which is available, as well as a SuperMutt, also available for you to get. And these are actually the two devices that your app can, that the sample app talks to. I'm going to go ahead and plug in the FX2, and it's going to appear on this list. So I'm just going to select it and tell the app to go ahead and start communicating USB with it. And what happens is I get a prompt saying, asking me as a user, do I want this app to be able to talk to this USB device? Now, if I say block, it's just going to give me an error, kind of boring demo. So I'm going to go ahead and say allow and perform a control transfer to the device. We will set this 7-segment display. I chose 3 because, hey, USB 3 is cool. And I will click set. And there you go. Now that you've seen how the app works, let's see how to write it. So to begin writing your app, you need to first know your device. And then you also need to figure out some of the details of your device, such as the class and device ID, which you'll then combine into a declaration made in your app manifest. So knowing your device means, of course, you need to know what protocol your device speaks. What do the bytes on the wire mean when you send and receive data? And how do you identify that a device does comply with your protocol? You need to know what driver loads. I'll give you a hint. It has to be WinUSB to use the API. And you also need to go ahead and make a declaration about how to know your device using the app manifest, which I'll go into now. So the USB device class can be defined in several ways. The most intuitive, I think, is the class ID of the device. Like I mentioned, a USB device's class is defined by these 3 bytes in the interface descriptor. And you can declare talking to a device of a particular class code with any subclass and protocol, which is number 1 here, or a particular class and subclass with any protocol, or you can specify all 3. As an alternative, there's a list of class names that you can declare that map to a class ID seen here. And lastly, you can also declare your class as a WinUSB device interface GUID. The other dimension of declaring your device is the device's ID. One option is to declare an explicit vendor ID and product ID, or VID/PID. And the other option is to declare that your app talks to any VID/PID for its given class. And I just like to note that when you declare a VID/PID or the class codes, that's always in hexadecimal. There is a limitation I'd like to point out to declaring that your app talks to any device ID, and that is that if you've defined a broad device class that your app talks to, then you're not allowed to declare any device ID. You can think of this as it doesn't make sense to declare that your app talks to any vendor-specific device. That's simply not imaginable, that a single app would be able to talk to every vendor-specific device in the world. So in cases like that, you need to declare each device ID that your app talks to. However, if you declare a narrow device class, such as personal healthcare, then you can go ahead and use the any for your device ID or declare specific device IDs. So in the simplest case, how do we go from I have a device to making the declaration? In this screenshot of Device Manager, I've pulled up the properties that tell you some of the options for device ID and class ID. On the left is hardware IDs, which tells you VID and PID, device ID. These are already in hexadecimal, so you don't need to convert them. On the right is compatible IDs, and it tells you the class, subclass, and protocol from the first USB interface descriptor. To declare these for your app, open your app in Visual Studio and find the package.appx manifest file. Right-click it and select Open With. We need to edit it with the XML text editor in raw form. The XML looks like this. At the top, if there's not already a namespace declaration for 2013, please add it. And later on, in a capabilities node, you need to declare a USB capability node. And under the USB capability node, you declare the combinations of device ID and class ID. So in this example, I've taken the SuperMutt device, which is the second device that the custom USB device access sample works with. And I've taken those codes we saw in the screenshot and declared the combination of device ID and class ID. If you want, you can declare more class IDs within a device ID or declare more device ID nodes as well. In addition to local Visual Studio checking, the store is going to validate your manifest at upload time, and when you attempt to open the device, there's some additional validation. And all of this is a really important step for, one, for getting the user's permission to use the device, as we saw in the demo, and two, for telling users up front in the store that this app is one that talks to USB devices. Let's jump into some code. How do we find out what USB devices are available that we might be able to talk to? So the first step is going to be to find devices connected to the system. Then we attempt to open the device, check for errors, and I'll also talk about closing the device before we talk about communicating with the device. To find the device, you have two options. On the left side is the find all async function, which finds all devices connected to the system right now. On the right side, you can use a device watcher, which is what we saw in the demo. That allows you to find out, get notified, when a device is connected to the system that you can talk to. These APIs don't just give you any device, because you can pass in a AQS query that says, I want a device of a particular vid PID that's a USB device that's connected to the system and that's running WinUSB. That's all done for you in the usbdevice.getDeviceSelector set of functions. In this case, I show the one for I want a particular vid and PID. So any result that you get from find all async or the device watcher is a USB device of the kind you specified. So the object you get back is called a device information, which represents a connected device in the system. And you take the ID of the device information and pass it on to the from ID async function of the USB device. And that, in turn, creates the USB device and opens it. So let's look at the code for that. There's two important things to note about opening the USB device. Before you call from ID async, you need to make sure that you're running on the UI thread. This is true for the first time that your app opens a particular model of a device. The reason is that the system needs to show a UI requesting whether the user wants to allow access from your app to this device model, as you saw. Now, once you've called from ID async, you need to determine whether it succeeded. Some common failures are going to cause the result to be a null pointer. Let's look at why. One reason is that the user said block. I don't want this app to access my device. Hopefully that doesn't happen too often. But if so, you can show a message saying, hey, I thought you wanted to access this device, but then you said block, so what's up? Otherwise, you might get an error denied by system, which usually indicates a problem with your manifest declaration. And the third kind of error is typically caused by some other app having the device open already. Now, before we jump into communication, I really want to talk about closing the device. Because only one app can open the device at a time, it's important to close the device when you finish with it. But it's also important to close the device anytime your app suspends, and the API is going to enforce this. The reason is that when your app suspends, which can happen when the user swaps to another app, your app can't run any code, so it doesn't make sense for it to hold exclusive access to the device. Therefore, you should register for app suspend events and close the device, stop attempting I/O, and then you can silently reopen the device when your app resumes. I've put in the code for closing the device. It's different between C++, C#, and JavaScript. C++ projects closing as delete, C# as dispose, JavaScript as close. Let's jump into the fun stuff. This is USB communication. This is mainly about the different kinds of USB transfers you can do and all the knowledge you need in order to perform them. And I'll also talk about descriptors as a separate feature of the API. So So the types of USB transfers are control, bulk, interrupt, and isochronous. Isochronous transfers are not supported in the API, but I'll talk about exactly how you do control, bulk, and interrupt transfers. You also need to note the direction of all of your transfers, because each of these transfer types is going to work a little bit differently based on whether it's an in to the system or out to the device transfer. Here's code for control out transfers. Now, this is going to take a little bit of time to explain. As you may know, every control transfer contains a mandatory setup packet and an optional data buffer or data phase. In the middle here is the setup packet initialization in C#. You may be familiar that a setup packet contains 5 fields, a request type with 3 subfields, a request value, and a length, which defines the length of the data phase, if any, 0 if none. There are 2 other values not mentioned here. They default to 0. That's the W index and W value in the setup packet. I'd also like to point out that W index may not end up being 0. We have a feature in the API where there's an extra recipient. Normally, recipients are device, interface, endpoint, or other. However, for interface, which is the preferred kind of control transfer to perform to separate functionality of the device, it's somewhat cumbersome to have to write the setup packet with the correct WIndex value for the interface every time you want to do a control transfer. So we've added a 5th recipient called default interface. If you use this recipient, it will overwrite the WIndex low byte to the interface number of the first interface. Now let's jump back to the top of this code where we declare the buffer. And the reason this comes first is so that we can pull the buffer's length into the setup packet. The way we create the buffer is with a data writer, which I'll talk about, and it ends up being 1 byte to write that number 3 onto the OSR USB FX2 board. Finally, at the bottom, we go ahead and perform the control transfer. When this code runs, that actually causes the transfer to begin on the bus, and by saying await, any subsequent code runs after the control transfer completes on the bus. Bulk and interrupt transfers require a concept of pipes. For control transfers, there's a default pipe, so you don't really need to think about it. But we have pipe objects that are used to perform bulk and interrupt transfers. Now, when you first get a USB device object, when you open that device, several more objects are actually created to support performing I/O immediately on the bulk and interrupt pipes. You can retrieve these pipe objects by accessing properties. You should know that several properties of USB objects return other USB objects or arrays of objects. So in this case, we start with a USB device and we read the default interface property. That gives us one of the USB interface objects, and on that USB interface object lives an array of objects called interface settings. Now, this interface settings array defines each of the USB interface settings that are defined within the interface. A USB interface contains 1 pipe for each endpoint of the currently selected interface setting. Now, in this case, in this diagram, there's only 1 interface setting. So there's a 1-to-1 mapping between pipes and endpoint descriptors. Pipes are what you use for I/O. Endpoint descriptors define what you might do with a pipe you don't have yet, and they also define some additional properties that you don't often need for the pipe. So the short story is that in most cases, you really don't need to worry about the stuff that's in gray here. You don't need to worry about additional interfaces because most devices only have 1 interface, and you don't need to worry about interface settings because most devices don't define alternate interface settings. So you can just use the default interface property, find the pipes directly from the arrays on the USB interface object, and from the pipes you can get directly to their descriptors if you want additional information about them. So having said that, let's actually do a bulk in transfer. As I mentioned before, you can see here the walking the device object tree from a USB device object through its default interface to a list of bulk in pipes. we select the first bulk in pipe. Now that bulk in pipe has a property called input stream. And this is a well-defined Windows Streams object that allows you to do typical stream operations on a USB pipe. The stream operation we're going to do here is create a data reader encompassing the stream. And the way that we get data from this in pipe is going to be to call datareader.loadAsync. That's going to call a function on the stream, which calls into WinUSB and actually loads data from the device. So let's talk a little bit about data reader and data writer, because you might not be familiar with these concepts. It's a little bit different from the buffer manipulation you might be doing in C and C++ with other USB devices. These are objects that encapsulate either a stream or a buffer. And in the case of streams, they really encapsulate performing I/O on the stream and holding an internal buffer for that I/O. So for example, a data reader for buffer manipulation contains these deserialization functions, such as read uint32 and read string. If you were to call these in succession, the first call reads the first 4 bytes out of the internal buffer, and the second call picks up where the end of those 4 bytes was and reads a string. You can also set the endianness to little endian or big endian on each of these objects. So bulk or interrupt out are going to look much like bulk in, except that we use a data writer instead of a data reader. We get an output stream, and we encapsulate it with the data writer. The data writer has an internal buffer that we're going to populate with an array of bytes. And then we send that data out by calling storeAsync on the data reader object. Interrupt in is a little bit special. We have provided a convenience using a WinRT construct for eventing so that you don't have to keep doing transfers for your interrupt in endpoints, where you really just want to be notified every time something happens. To provide for that, we give you an event callback. And there's 2 parts to using this. The first one is when you register for the event callback. And registering for it actually begins the interrupt in transfers under the covers. And whenever your device provides data on its interrupt in pipe, that data gets passed into your callback function. So your callback function runs every time your device indicates it's got something to tell you. For USB descriptors, we provide some support that's better than what you might be used to. In the old days, you might remember incrementing by B length to read a set of descriptors. That's no longer necessary with this API. Instead, we create an array of USB descriptor objects out of the USB configuration descriptor set. And from each of the objects in this array, you can parse it as a standard descriptor, as seen with the configuration descriptor triparse, interface descriptor, endpoint descriptor. These will create an object representing the standard descriptor, if possible. Otherwise, you can go ahead and read the raw descriptor by getting its buffer. And this allows you to read custom descriptors and look at what descriptors are adjacent to them to provide a decent experience for descriptor parsing. Let's talk about some more app features we have related to the API. Those are going to be serial over USB, device power management, background tasks, composite devices, exclusivity, and debugging. Serial over USB is part of this feature. Provided that you can load WinUSB on the serial over USB device, you can talk to it with this API, and we've created a separate sample to demonstrate this. However, this API doesn't provide any functionality encompassing serial over USB, so your app needs to speak serial over USB just as the sample does. Also, there may be a compatibility trade-off where in some cases you have an existing app and driver that talk to each other. If you want to use this API, you need WinUSB, so you need to decide what's best for your device. Device power management is free. You don't need to worry about your device's idle and low power states. WinUSB is automatically going to save the most power possible whenever there's no communication going on with the device. Or even if you have an in-transfer pending, such as an interrupt in event handler enabled, the device can still go to low power state and be able to come out of it by waking. Let's talk about some background tasks. So I mentioned earlier that when your app suspends, you need to close the device. This could prevent some interesting scenarios, such as performing a sync with the device where the user doesn't want to sit and watch it go, or performing a firmware update where if the user were to switch away and your I/O is all stopped, that could destroy the device. Now, we actually do provide for these scenarios using background tasks. These tasks can run whether your app is suspended or not, and they're kind of like a mini application that has its own handle to your device. So here are the steps to using background tasks. First, your app needs to declare that it uses background tasks in the app manifest, the same place where we declared that the app talks to a USB device. Whenever the app is ready to do a background task, it creates the background task object or trigger object and triggers them to run. I'd like to note that your background task won't be throttled like other system background tasks. There's no CPU time quota. However, there is a time limit on how long the task can run. Windows enforces launch and runtime policies, which I'll describe, for these two scenarios, for sync and device update background tasks. And this keeps users in control and preserves battery life. Background tasks can report their progress back to the app in case it's running in the foreground and wants to show the user how far it is. So let's talk about the sync scenario specifically. When you do a sync scenario, you use a trigger called device use trigger. Use this background task for routine device sync operations. The policies around sync are as follows. To launch it, you need to already have consent for opening the device. The user must consent when you trigger this task to device sync, and that'll happen the first time your app tries it only. The app must be in the foreground when it triggers the task, of course, and the device must stay attached to the system. While the task is going on, you can only have one background task, and Windows will ensure that you need to have I/O active at least every 5 seconds. You have up to 10 minutes to run this task. Device servicing has a couple nuances that are different. Again, these are for critical device updates, such as firmware update, where it needs to succeed, it needs to go on. The policies are, similarly, it's got to have device consent already, and the user is going to be requested to provide consent for each device update. And the app must be in the foreground in order to trigger the task again. And your app, this is really important, your app has to be the privileged app for the device in device metadata. Device metadata is what's provided by the manufacturer to declare several pieces of information about that device model. And one of those pieces of information is a single privileged app that gets to do special things with the device. This is one of those special things. So only one app in the world gets to update firmware for any particular device. While it's running, again, you only get one background task at a time. The device is allowed to restart, reconnect, all those kinds of things that you might expect in a firmware update. And the time limit is 30 minutes. I'd like to talk a little bit about composite USB devices, which are multifunction devices. If WinUSB is loaded on one function or multiple functions, you get to open each WinUSB function as if it were a complete USB device. There's also this exclusivity that I've mentioned before. It's really important to keep in mind that when you hold open a device, no one else can talk to it. this is actually a feature for you because you don't have to worry about someone else messing with the device while you're using it. But you also have the responsibility of closing it on app suspend and when you're done. And you need to understand that opening the device can fail because someone else already has it open. Lastly, let's talk just a little bit about debugging. We've provided WPP trace messages in three of the components that you saw on the architecture slide so that you can understand maybe what's going on under the covers for some of the decisions or the I/O that's being done. These are the API itself, the device broker, and WinUSB. Now, I don't expect you to copy-paste these GUIDs or type them out. We've actually posted instructions for performing this trace with all the commands you need and everything on USB Core blog. And here are a few tips and tricks for you. A try-catch block is important for the cases where an exception might be thrown. Very commonly, maybe the I/O operation is one that could throw an exception. Maybe the device is going to stall the transfer. You also need to, you don't need to, but it would be a good idea to watch for the device disconnecting. And this allows you to stop your I/O because you know you can't talk to the device anymore. And you can also let the user know that things aren't going to work because the device is unplugged. Maybe they should plug it back in or something. Apart from JavaScript, there's a caveat where to update the UI, you need to be on the UI thread. And often when you get a callback from an asynchronous operation completing, for example, you're not going to be on the UI thread. So you have to have this code that switches to the UI thread to perform an update in the UI. And note that when you close the USB device, that returns immediately, and it attempts to close the handle, it cancels your I/O. You may have I/O completing after the device closes, and because of that, there may be a short delay before you can reopen the device, or another app or your background task can reopen the device. So you should be aware of that and test for it. PC internal devices are for OEMs to use. They are not openable by any app like peripheral devices are. Peripheral devices enable an ecosystem of apps. PC internal devices are only accessible by privileged apps. Here's some related sessions for you. Like I mentioned, 23, about all the device protocols. 26 focuses on Bluetooth, but talks to HID and USB a bit as well. 28 and 24B are for HID and Bluetooth. And 108 is about background tasks, but not relating specifically to devices. Some resources for you are the sample links and the API references, as well as some information on how to install WinUSB, which you can do without writing any INF. You can do that in your firmware. Thanks for joining me in this talk. I hope you found it useful. I hope you get some use out of the API. And feel free to check out our blog, write comments, and email us.